my privilege to call the Winter Park City Commission of December 8th, 2014, the session. I invite you to silence your cell phones as we do on the dais. Invite you to stand with us. Our own electric director, Jerry Warren, will be offering her invocation. But before we do that, we're going to recognize and honor with a moment of silence a great Winter Park resident leader, Ken Murrah, who passed this weekend. Our hearts are obviously sad, but also grateful for the influence and the blessings he was on our community. So while you remain standing, we'll offer a moment of silence, and then I'll invite Jerry to pray for us.
Father, first of all, we would like to thank you for our friend Ken Murrah and the service that he has provided for many, many years to this community. We're grateful for that, and we thank you for him. Lord, we know his family has heavy hearts, and we ask that your Holy Spirit would comfort them and give them peace. And we pray that in your name. Lord, we thank you for Winter Park, Florida, and we thank you for all the people that live, work, and play in this community. We thank you for the privilege that we have to serve them. We pray, Lord, that we would serve them competently. We pray that we would serve them respectfully and with grateful hearts. Thank you for the privilege of a democratic form of government. We pray that we would make policies that are in the best interest of our citizens. We ask your presence here. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jerry. It is my understanding Mr. Murrah's services, I believe, are on January 4th. Is
yes,
that correct?
That's correct.
At the First United Methodist Church, I believe at 3:30 or prelude at 3:30, 4 o'clock, but the actual service or a special concert in his memory. So obviously Ann and his son and the children that remain and the family that remain in our hearts during this difficult time. Mr. Knight, we have an agenda in front of us. Is there something you'd like to...
No changes, sir.
Did you want to add an item of discussion to your...
Well, yes, sir.
Why don't we go ahead and do that now?
Okay, that's a good idea. Under my report, if we could add a discussion of the 2908 Temple Trail purchase, the commission approved that at $95,000. They counteroffered, so I just need to have an action item.
I would move the agenda with that addition to it, the addition of a discussion of 2908 Temple Trail. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any further commission discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. I have the opportunity to recognize a wonderful committee that's made a real difference in our city, and then we're anticipating a recognition for someone who's made a real difference, and we'll do that if they arrive. I think every golfer's dream is to break 100. Some of us do it occasionally, and some of us know what it's like to be over 100. Well, our golf course has broken 100, so to speak. What an indeed honor that the city of Winter Park this year and our Winter Park golf course celebrated its 100th anniversary. As you know, we had a beautiful event in September, even featured and supported by the Secretary of State of Florida, where he was also able to make a wonderful announcement. A wonderful announcement about the Florida Historic Golf Trail, of which our course is one of, I think, believe 51 courses in the state, 50 other courses that have been so deemed, courses built prior to World War II and that have significance and importance to our city. I learned how to grew up playing golf on this course and still find it very challenging to this very, very day. And to celebrate our time of getting to be 100, a Centennial Golf Committee was formed, and we want to recognize them today for all that they did, because their creativity took what could have been a cake and cookies event and turned it into a really, really great event, and we really, really appreciate that. You'll find as we introduce them and remember these people that each one of them were chosen with a special reason in mind. And we've had even the golf professionals and others who have been involved with this to make it just a very, very happy event. So I want to recognize those who are here today, and as well as invite them to come forward. First, it was a former touring professional, Wally Armstrong. I understand he's not able to be with us today, but he served on our group, and it was really great to have Wally's present. Mr. Gary Deals here. Gary, come on up with me. Linda Coleman from our Historical Association. So good to have Linda and what she represents there. Mr. Richard Moorhead joined us on this committee. Bill Neidlinger was one of the brain trusts and forces behind it. And as I have found, all things good in our community, when Bill's behind it, something good's going to happen. As well as Alan Trevelyan, former Mayor Alan Trevelyan, former State Representative Alan Trevelyan. Alan, there's no truth that you were there when the golf course opened. I know that is not true, but I bet you played it a couple of times. So that's the spirit. It's good to have Alan here in good health with us today. We also want to recognize additional people who helped make the day and the time so special in just a moment. The centennial celebration was a huge success because of the partnering and planning of this committee before you, along with the gracious gift and donation from the Elizabeth Morris Juniors Foundation, as well as the Golf Channel. I'd like to invite Arlen Hill Ward to come forward, the board chairman of the Charles Hoseman Morris Foundation and the Elizabeth Morris Juniors Foundation. And I believe that he was going to be joined today by Matt Haggerty of the news director of the Golf Channel, but I understand Mr. Haggerty cannot be with us today. It's not a good day to play golf, so I don't know where he is, but it is because of these community partners as well as community citizens and leaders that has made an incredible difference in our golf course as well as our community. One of the most visible contributions to the centennial celebration is the beautiful new courtyard clock, which was graciously donated by the Elizabeth Morris Genius Foundation. And shines not just on the first tee, but with its lit qualities. I've seen it throughout the city, actually, as I go by. And what a wonderful beacon and what a wonderful contribution. Mr. Ward, thank you, Harold, for all that the foundation does in our community, but that was really wonderful. We have a special gift that we want to present to you. In addition, I'm going to invite our city, I know Brenda's here, I think Lee's going to come forward, in John's absence to help us appropriately recognize these individuals who were so successful with this. We have a beautiful, that's going to be for the committee members. So we have one for each of you here, but if you could ceremonially present those, I would appreciate it. As you know, Justin Ingram's here, a professional too. A good day not to be playing, I guess, but Justin, mighty fine attire there, good looking. And then last but not least, we have for the Winter Park, for the Morris Museum and Genius Foundation, this beautiful, beautiful clock is a replica of their contribution. And thanks, small thanks for what they have done. So, we would like to get a picture with the commission, if you all would join us on the dais here, under the dais, and so that we can get a committee picture, as well as with Harold's involvement here, and thank all of those that were involved. In fact, there were several staff that were intimately involved, and if they would join us, Lindsay, I know kind of you were intimately involved, especially from the historic, if you would join us, Clarissa, Teresa, I don't know who's going to take your picture, but I know you were involved. Maybe you can run out and put it on timer or something. Justin Ingram, I think everybody knows, our head golf professional, as well as Craig O'Neill, and of course Leif and Brenda are here too. So join us if you will, and former Mayor Trevelyan, former State Rep Trevelyan has brought us that nice hat, so somehow we've got to put that in the picture too.
We might have to go to three rows here.
Alan, do you wear your hat?
If you turn ever so slightly, everybody come turn us a little slightly, that would be better. So we already have it. And Alan's got the hat on. That looks really, really great. Thank you, Dave, for the double duty.
Thank you.
You know, in addition, several of these individuals have been appointed to our golf task force, which is looking at what may become, including additional enhancements to the golf club with the days and months ahead. And this is a precious resource. Even if you're not a golfer, what this city would be without the beautiful green space that's represented by the golf course, I think every one of us can appreciate and enjoy the golf course. But for those of us, the last time I played, shot 77, there, am I that? Best round of golf of my life. Two birdies, vice mayor, had missed six. Oh, man, I was hot. So it's...
That was that for 9 or 18.
No, that was 18. So I'm gonna shoot my age someday. I'll have to, like you said, skip the last six holes to do that. But we have a special recognition also to make for something very, very interesting called Baxter's Bags. I've invited Vice Mayor Leary to make this presentation for Baxter Merrill's Eagle Scout Project.
Thank you, sir.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Baxter, can you come join me up here, please? I moved into my neighborhood about 5 years or so ago, and there was a Pied Piper of all the neighborhood kids. He was about this big at the time. I've gotten a lot older, and you've gotten a lot bigger. I want to tell you a little bit about Baxter's project. For his Eagle Scout project, called Baxter's Bags, Baxter raised over $18,000 in funds to buy and fill 400 backpacks for homeless residents of Central Florida. On Saturday, November 15th, I attended his backpack-filling party. And I tell you, Henry Ford had nothing on this kid. There was, the place was run like a top. It was unbelievable. I walked in there and I got in the way. I mean, I seriously went in to go check in on it. And how many people did you have there?
It ended up being like 75 people came out to come help me stuff all the backpacks.
He had 75 volunteers walking in a line, filling, grabbing one thing, taking it through, filling up a backpack. It was incredible. It really was impressive. They stuffed the bag with 15 different essential items, many of which you and I take for granted. Water, T-shirts, blankets.
Water, T-shirts, blankets. Soap,
toothbrush.
Deodorant. Yeah.
Deodorant, a lot of things. Great role model for us to set our children to look towards. The backpack filling party was also a wonderful group of people that new friendships. There was a lot of different people from a lot of different organizations there. It was really impressive. Anyway, they will be distributed 400 bags. The value of each bag is what, Baxter? Did you put it up?
Well, we ended up, when I originally started, I was like, oh, the bags are like $30. And then I got so much stuff donated that I couldn't even tell you, like, basically free. I mean, for me. But as far as how much each bag costs, I ended up selling it like $35, yeah.
I'll tell you, what was nice about this, too, was a partnership between Baxter. He contacted the Chamber of Commerce, contacted the city. Not only did he have financial donations, he got a lot of donations of the essential items. It was really a nice partnership throughout the city. So it was just an opportunity to recognize Baxter and let him say a few words.
Okay. I wasn't really, I guess, planning on speaking, but I want to thank Mr. Leary especially for making the connections with me through the Chamber and through the city for giving me the ability to actually make this happen, because without him, I wouldn't have had a facility to stuff all 400 backpacks. So, thank you. And a few weeks ago, I met this group that wanted to start a documentary about Baxter's Bags. And I spent a day in downtown Orlando just kind of wandering the streets, getting to understand what homelessness is like. And I really tell you, like, I'm sorry, it makes me emotional every time. We don't really understand, and these people, like, I'm sorry. It's like, it's really difficult what these people go through, and I'm sorry, I didn't even mean to. And my goal is to make Baxter's Bags go much further than just Orlando and Winter Park. And I mean, I know with all the wonderful people here in Winter Park and friends and family, eventually I'll reach that goal. But I just thank you, everyone, for the support and whatnot. So,
sure.
Thank you.
Hold on. Make up. Yeah.
1, 2, 3. And one more time. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would be remiss without having the floor and recognizing our city staff who have ushered the holidays in such a wonderful way. Yes, please give them a round of applause. I think there's a few that haven't slept, maybe since last Wednesday when we had Thursday wonderful event, Friday wonderful event, Saturday morning the parade. And for those of us who were on the parade route and get to see the children's faces, if you're behind the scenes, you may not be able to do that. You realize why we celebrate the holidays and what a difference it makes. So the city said, oh, and I might add the more beautiful lights, even more beautiful lights than years before. We know it takes extra work. We know that you do it out of a heart of love, but I just want you to know it's making a difference for our residents and guests. So thank you so very much. That concludes my report. We're going to go to the city manager's report. Mr. Knight.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First item, we'll deal with the one we added to the agenda, which is 2908 Temple Trail. Back in October, the City Commission approved making an offer of $95,000 for that property. We had an internal appraisal of $110,000, I believe it was, and the bank is counteroffered at $105,000 and said they would sell it at $105,000. A staff recommendation that we go ahead and move forward with that purchase.
I would move that. As I recall, when we discussed it, we were going to give you latitude to negotiate that, and obviously now we have a firm price from the seller, I guess in this case the bank. So I move that. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Commissioner Mackin. Commission discussion?
No, that was my recollection as well, as we had some leeway in there to do that. So
I'm going to open the floor for public comment. If citizens wish to discuss this matter with us, they're welcome to. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. I'll ask the clerk to read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes, and that's very exciting. Thank you, Mr. Knight.
Thank you. In your packet, we put the capacity report. We would be glad to talk about that tonight, or if you want to talk about it at some future commission meeting, we'd be glad to do that also.
Would you summarize in general, as I read it, it feels like at this point that our capacity per our comprehensive plan, with the exception of roads, and many of these roads are not ours even to manage, particularly in terms of what comes and doesn't come through our city, that we are, I guess, under.
Oh, I apologize.
It's
a microphone. Apologize, man.
Didn't know what was going on. Just hold on for a moment.
Microphone.
Yeah, it's okay. It's what happens in the penalty box. It's going to be glass next. That's the next thing. We're under our capacities, right, of what we believe? I mean, as I looked at this in summary, is that a fair assessment?
That's correct. The comprehensive plan, you know, sets capacity levels for different areas, and this report tells you where we are with the current population and traffic and all those types of things. So if you, Dory, if you want to summarize.
We worked with every department that over really has the oversight of those particular level of services, and we analyzed where we were. Yes, Mayor, that is exactly. We are meeting or under our current level of service requirements in each case. So we are
and being under is good in this case.
And being right. Under is good, exactly. It was a good step to get us ready for the comp plan update in 2016 and to stop and take a look. We had a slight shift in population over the last couple of years, and this year we came back a little, but even where we are, we've got the capacity to handle based on the projections in the comprehensive plan for the next couple of years.
That's helpful to me. Commissioner Sprinkle, then Commissioner Cooper.
I just wanted to say that I was really surprised when I looked at how the numbers were so much higher. Was it 2008? And we had gone down considerably across the board.
transportation?
Well, really across the board. When you looked at all across the board, that was a very interesting to me that we had been so high 5 years ago and we had lost so many people and a lot of things had come back. But I was surprised at that.
Commissioner Cooper?
Two things, Dory. Are we reserving capacity for all the projects as we approve them? Randy, is that the way you deal with that?
Yes,
so we're keeping a running total of all approved projects. Are we doing that for Ravadage also for the entire entitlement at Ravadage? Are we reserving capacity in the way of water for Ravadage?
He will need to meet our level of service standard for water and sewer as he develops out that project.
So we're not making him reserve now the capacity that he has entitlements to?
Are you asking if the entitlements he has, is that covered in what we're reserving?
Yeah, cities, as they approve projects, they have to go through a capacity review for concurrency.
Yes.
And they actually set aside capacity for all of the projects that get approved. And that's what I'm asking.
As isn't concurrency at the state level?
It's no longer something that's considered. But with regard to that,
with water sewer,
he's got to be able to meet our standards as he goes through. So if he does not, if that capacity were not available, he would need to do improvements on his site to be able to make
so
that capacity
wouldn't fall back
available.
Since we as a commission or have adopted a certain entitlement that he has. If we get to the point where he is ready to build those, we're not currently reserving that capacity. We're waiting and doing that when he applies to build.
On a case-by-case, correct.
Okay. So if we, and this is a future question, I think, for legal, but when we have projects that are extended year after year after year, as the legislature is doing, mm-hmm. and we have projects that have out-year capacity requirements, and we know they're there, and they have entitlements to build, we're all good with that, but we're only actually ensuring capacity as they come in to build, my question would be, and Larry, not for tonight, but think about this, in the out-years, since people already have entitlements, if they come to the city and we have already, by way of approving day-to-day projects, eaten up that capacity that they're anticipating having, do we then put ourselves in the situation where we have to scurry around to generate capacity? Because in the situation of water, that's very, very expensive. I think the price tag on the delta between what we can do and what St. John's has permitted is about $3 million.
So that's why entitlements generally
$3 billion.
Excuse me. Issues fire if they're not used within some period of time.
Well, just kind of think about that one. That's not an easy question because we're not the only city that's not reserving out year capacity for these big projects. And the question becomes, what as a group do we do when we get to the point where people are ready to build the things they have entitlement to build? That's my question, and not for today, but the question is, who's responsible for coming up with that capacity?
So can I see if I understand your point? You're just asking if something that's entitled,
already entitled,
does the city, will the city be negatively impacted when that project eventually comes online?
If we have eaten up the capacity little by little.
So when it comes online, right. Can it negatively affect the city?
We should be reserving, as long as we have an active development order or a development agreement, we should be continuing to reserve that capacity.
Okay. So it is set aside.
It should be set aside, and it should be part of the reserve that goes into it.
But it behooves us, just like if Carolyn wants to add a bedroom onto her home, that we would begin to adapt and plan for whatever days that we would, if we... I mean, what this report shows is we're not bumping up against any capacity.
Not in our existing population, and I was asking, does this report take into account all the entitlements?
When the comprehensive plan was adopted in 2009, the base data that was used for that included the future projections. So the level of service standards that are in the comprehensive plan are reflective of the population of 33,000 that would have been done at the time that the plan was extended to. So the levels of services that are in there and the level of service analysis that we did are all based on those future development entitlements, all based on that future development in that population. So where we're hitting that, where you're concerned about the reserves, unless we go over what I would say would be our adopted population in our comprehensive plan, we have enough capacity to get us to that comprehensive plan population level at this point.
Good. I just wanted to make sure we didn't have to do any last-minute scrambling.
Nope, we shouldn't have to.
Thank you.
Great. Any other information about that?
Mr. Mayor, I just got an I would be remiss as having been a proponent of doing something with Denning Drive if I did not highlight the fact that that road is so far under capacity, and we'll talk about that in the new year.
And my guess is 1792 is probably way over capacity, so I don't disagree with you.
Mr. Mayor, the one last thing is I noticed that the amount of parkland is significantly different than the Wade Trim study that was performed in 2009.
Yes, let me explain that. When we started looking at this, I asked staff to audit the list to make sure that all the properties we owned were reflected in the list. And it was, I think the biggest change was in the conservation land. The original list did not include all of the conservation land we owned up around Howell Branch.
And that's
and we've added to that since 2009. So,
but that's all.
That's what it was.
Addition of conservation.
That was the main. That was the main change. There was a couple other very minor parks that weren't on that list, but that was the biggest chunk. I think it was
that's
like
reasonable.
34 acres or something like that.
Okay. Other questions?
No, sir.
We're going to move on then. Anything else from the city manager?
No, sir.
Questions of the city manager?
No, sir.
No, sir.
Okay, we're going to move to the city attorney's report, Mr. Brown.
Nothing to report.
Questions of Mr. Brown?
No, sir.
Hearing none, I'll move on then. We're going to have a non-action item presentation about tree planting. Drew, come on down.
Mayor Bradley, commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to present our tree planting update and strategies moving forward. You asked us a few months ago to provide you with some planting spaces, vacant spaces within the city. And so we were on a mission to provide that. We do have a map to show you. But we were really kind of excited when we ended up with these numbers, because total right-of-way trees are nearly 26,000, and with the vacant spots, that ended up being, we have 93% vacant, 93% of the planting possibilities planted already. So we're doing pretty well as far as city planting projects. And last year we planted 350 trees, and we'll be bumping nearly 100 by the end of 2014. New plantings in the right-of-way. Our planting goal is, it hasn't worked this way as of yet, but we plan on removing a tree, grinding the stump, and planting a new tree within a month's period of time. That is what we're working towards, and then we will infill with time when we infill the other spaces with time. And then we'll also be shifting, I would say in 3 to 5 years, to more maintenance money will go towards planting versus removals. We just signed a contract for planting the right-of-way trees, and it's for Florida number one shade trees, and the average cost is $360. But we could not get a contract for a year due to the fact that the supply and demand is really out of control right now as far as increased building and new construction projects all over the state. So we could only secure a contract for 6 months at that rate.
Drew, who is the contract with?
It's Keller Outdoor.
That's great.
Drew, can we entertain? Do you want to do the presentation, or can we do questions?
I defer to the presenter, so.
Well,
we do questions, that's what we do.
Randy, is it, and being in the business, I appreciate exactly what the city's up against. I know a lot of companies, I know a lot of private companies are going to contract, either growing or purchasing. Is the city able to do that? And that might not have the answer right now, but they go in and say, hey, we're going to plant 500 trees, we're going to essentially buy them ahead of time, and then the contractor is just responsible for planting them. And so you get that price at the beginning of the year as opposed to having to wait 6 months, where this we'll be paying more in 6 months for these trees than we are now. And I don't know if that's possible through our bidding processes or not, but it might be something to consider, because I know a lot of private entities are doing that. Just because, yes, we're going to be short on quality trees here in Central Florida in no time.
That is something that Drew and I are entertaining. Recently, when the bids came back, we had very few bids in general. And then when Keller was only willing to hold the price for 6 months, we've talked about securing some trees to be grown on behalf of the city. Not at our tree farm, but to be...
Through a commercial nursery that's used to doing this kind of thing.
That's something that we intend to look into in January.
Okay.
Because we anticipate that this is going to continue to be an issue in the next 18 to 24 months. Okay.
And okay. I've actually made contact with Cherry Lake Tree Farm, and they are willing to entertain that idea, and we're in the process of setting up a meeting. They are wanting to know quantities, species, et cetera, before we go into a detailed...
Right, and I think thanks to our forestry plan, we probably know, yes, we're going to plant X number of trees a year or anticipate that, so it should make it a lot easier to do that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Andrew, Florida number one is an addition to our city. Am I correct? Before, we didn't have that criteria until we had our urban forestry plan?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
People may not know what that means in the audience. You may want to define Florida number one.
Sure. Florida number one nursery stock has certain qualities about it that will provide a better tree versus a tree that has crossing rubbing branches, et cetera. It's just a better tree for an urban environment, and it also costs more.
But we're planting a better tree than we planted in previous years.
We are planting a much better tree. It will survive. It'll be less maintenance costs through the years.
That's the key.
It's, in my opinion, the right thing to do. But your leadership has made that happen. We thank you. Continue, please.
So the current budget, we've got $150,000 set aside for tree planting, plus the $90,000 in the tree fund for this year. And then if we catch up on the removals and the hazard mitigation removals and hazard mitigation pruning, then we'll move some of that money over to planting. But we have no intentions on falling behind as far as the trees that are being removed. We are trying to replant on a tree-for-tree basis if the conditions in the field allow. So
Drew, you just covered a really important point there really quickly, and I think people need to understand that a little bit deeper, because there is concern amongst some groups that we're not planting as rapidly as we can. And I think the goal, and I think what people don't understand, is there's some hazard mitigation we need to take care of that we're behind on, that we've been behind on, and we're trying to catch up. But once we take care of that mitigation, that money that we're setting aside for the mitigation can then be put towards the plantings of the new trees. So we increase the plantings once we take care of the things that are dangerous and in jeopardy of coming down.
Absolutely. And we're trying to find that balance right now between hazard mitigation pruning, hazard mitigation removals, and also tree planting.
Right.
Because we don't want to remove too many without planting them back. But then we also have to ensure that we, you know, take care of the mitigation aspect of it.
Thank you.
So our individual surveys that we located trees out in the field, and depending upon the driving factor was the size of the planting strips. So that most of the time. There are some other utility infrastructure issues, but that determined if a tree in the vacant spots would be an understory, a medium, or a shade, and it ended up being 1,785 trees, and 686 of them are slated to be shade trees. So, you know, in the grand scheme of what we're doing, I think we're you know, going back in with as many shade trees as what we are removing. So here's the map that the arborists were out in the field identifying every potential vacant spot within the city limits. The green, or the red dots are the shade trees. The orange are medium, and the yellow are understory. When the tree is actually planted, the dots will then become green. So we'll, and so this is all on our GIS mapping system.
It's just really important to clarify one more time that these 1,785 trees are not trees that are being, have recently been removed. These are vacant spaces that have been vacant spaces for quite some time. So that's, these dots on the map.
Thank you, Michelle. So this is not, when a tree comes down, it's not on this list at the moment. These are vacant spots in addition to spots where trees
right.
are being,
and so these,
that was confusing.
But I'm assuming if we go forward, you'll yep. keep this updated.
Yes, so yes, it'll continue to be updated. But these are not spaces where we've removed a tree. These are vacant spaces available for a tree.
Yeah.
And that's just really key, because we're trying to do the one-for-one replacement on the removal.
That was what was confusing to me, at least, the last time we ran these numbers. So thank you for clarifying that.
Commissioner Sprinkle has
these are the sticks with the flags on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. What are the sticks with the flags on them?
Some of those were, Commissioner Sprinkle. We originally started out, you know, doing the sticks with the flags, and that was too out of control, and you know, it started a kind of a frenzy. When will we get our tree? But so that was part of, we thought, okay, people will realize that they will be getting a tree. So no, some of those are the sticks with the flags, but we don't have sticks with flags at every location.
I just think we need to clarify what sticks with flags mean, because if they mean two different things, then that's not clear. And so if they don't need to be there, then let's take the sticks with the flags up, because they aren't going to sprout. So I just want to get either the flags down. I don't really like to go around town and see the sticks with the flags, because they've been going a while.
Right, we don't either, and we are no longer doing the sticks with the flags.
Is it,
why don't we pick them up?
Report? Yeah, I mean, I get that same comment. I've had a stick in my yard for 6 months,
yeah.
And so if they're not
yeah.
indicating something that's going to happen in a very short term, and I mean weeks, then I would recommend or ask that we take those, pick them up.
If they're not doing anything for us, this is what's ruling and not the stick with a flag, then let's don't put a bunch of sticks out.
That was the process before that they always, and that was what the contractors were used to when they were planting.
We used the sticks to try to get a better price on the trees so that people would know where they would potentially be bidding to plant the trees, but it hasn't worked out as we planned, because we haven't been able to find somebody who can get the quantity of trees at one time that we need. So we've been taking the trees in smaller lots. So we took a lot of 40, we're getting ready to take a lot of 30. And because we've been taking the trees in smaller lots, the stick strategy is not a good strategy, and we've recognized that now.
People are moving the sticks too.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just say, take the sticks down, okay?
That's all I'm saying. Take
that will be done.
Okay.
Yeah,
I know where some will disappear tonight.
Continue, please.
So this map is a canopy coverage map, which is really interesting. And one of the interns from Chris and Abby's section worked with us, or they actually did it and shared this map with us. And so the yellow is greater than 50% canopy coverage by a street segment. And so you can see the blue is vacant. So the yellow and the greens are where we have the canopy coverage, and then the blue is the vacant spots. So
the blue is less than 25%, so it's a few trees.
Yeah, it's right.
That's really great.
So the current overall canopy coverage for the city is what percent now?
It's more than, the overall, it's more than 50% canopy coverage. And the U.S. Forest Service recommends at least 40%. So we're doing better than.
And I think we used to claim we had 50-55%.
So yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. So is this consistent with the sustainability report?
Yes, ma'am. So with our planting, we have certain specifications that we have to work with. The biggest limiting factor, or the most critical limiting factor, is the planting strip widths. We're unable to put a shade tree in a planting strip that's 3 feet or less. It doesn't make sense. It's not good for the tree. It's not good for the infrastructure, the roads, the sidewalks, the drainage, the gutters. So we have all these restrictions when we're planting trees. So, you know, of those 1,700 spaces, we had to take into account all of these specifications that we work around on a daily basis. So when we're driving around, it might look like we could install more trees than what we really can because we have so many of these restrictions.
Hey, Drew, can you go back 1 second? How do we end up, I know prior to your arrival here and creating this first plan ever, which is great, we have some areas, I mean, I'm particularly thinking of Webster between Denning and Pennsylvania. It looks like there were oaks planted there probably in between 2000 and 2005. Those seem very close together. I mean, how are those things going to age? They're certainly not 50 to 60 feet apart. They've got to be 15 feet apart. Are we just going to let them go and see?
Some of those trees are not doing so well anyway. So a few years down the road, we might end up, you know, selectively removing if they're not doing well. But
they do take from each other?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, eventually they'll grow into each other and it becomes an unhealthy situation, and you're really, yeah.
Okay, so we'll probably have to go in and...
You want to thin the herb.
Yeah, do a little culling. Okay.
Thank
you.
It's an urban forest. That's what you do to an urban forest.
Yeah.
So I've included some pictures of what we're up against when we're out trying to replant trees, not necessarily where we've removed trees, but when we're dealing with the vacant spaces, and I'll just run through these pictures. 6 foot minimum distance from underground utility facilities, and that's a minimum. Again, more infrastructure restrictions. Decorative street lights. We oftentimes, with current conditions with existing trees, we run into, you know, the street light doesn't illuminate the proper allowed amount of light due to the trees. So we're trying to be proactive. Edges of driveways we need to stay away from. And then in a lot of cases, there are multiple infrastructure limitations. We've got underground facilities, we have roads, we have, you know, line of sight issues. So we're just dealing with a lot of and overhead utilities, although we do take that into consideration, but we know we're looking at the undergrounding plan as well. And then here's a planting strip that's less than 3 feet, and it looks so barren that there's really not a lot we can do there. These trees at this site right here, these trees have been planted just real last week. And there's the ideal planting strip. We wish we could have those for every location.
Excuse me, Drew. Do our codes now reflect the placement of sidewalks and the placement of the lights and anything that we can control in such a location so that in the future we are creating those ideal strips?
I don't believe that it's set in stone, but we work very closely with Public Works and the underground and the electric utility to work. You know, we're part of that team, also the planning department and DRC meetings where we work to get that plant size of planting strip, if at all.
The front setbacks for properties so that we can accommodate an ideal strip in the future.
Well, the real challenge there, unfortunately, is that we're not building new roads. I mean, we are doing a lot of new lots. But we have, where these trees are being planted are within the city right-of-way, and so that right-of-way is set.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest challenge we have as an established city, is that we are not, as we do it, if we do in Greenfield, yes, you can come out and say, yeah, we're going to create a greater right-of-way to create those ideal tree lawns, but I know what forestry is up against and whatnot is, yeah, there's a lot of places where we have 2 or 3 feet back of curb, and that's just the limitation
on
of the right-of-way.
On the arterial roads that we have, where we have the large car lots now, and we have the large shops.
Again, it's a matter of where, even on Cateca, it's within the right-of-way.
As we work with those people, we should probably do all that we can to where we're being asked for consideration to make that trade so that we end up being able to support street trees.
Yes, ma'am.
And we have a mean shovel there, right?
We have neighborhoods that have worked with us. For example, Park North and Mr. John. Is he still here?
Yes.
He'd give us a big thumbs up, I think, on the work we did in their neighborhood, because we were able to work together, shrink the size of the road, actually, so the road's a little bit smaller, but it gave us a much nicer planting strip, and so we were able to do some nice shade trees in there. So we are trying to do that when we can.
Okay. Other questions? Drew, thank you very much. I would like, Mr. Knight, if you could, to maybe summarize, like, I think it'd be good for us to get a report on, like, our last 5-year funding and all of the ways in the trees. I noticed you'd notice how many trees have been planted, maybe how many trees have been removed. I think this would be, we spent a lot of time getting the urban forestry plan right. Now I think it's time to track it and follow it. I think that'd be good information to present to the public. And the GIS is available on the website, so people can click on that?
It's not quite available yet. It's going to be very soon.
But it will be.
But we do have a paper map that we can put in your packet so that you'll all be able to see. And we're really close to
being able to. It's a lot more important for me for that to be posted on the website.
Yeah.
I'd rather refer citizens to that. So.
We're very close to that.
And then the GIS. So
yeah.
If you want to post the paper map now, do it. Post the paper map on the web. I mean, it won't be a paper, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, as a PDF. Yeah.
Put the picture on it now, and then
it'll be interactive very soon.
And then interactive. Commissioner Sprinkle.
Okay, so this weekend I had a phone call from someone who wanted to know why the tree was taken down. Because when they asked the people who took the tree down, they said, "You can't ask me. You have to go ask the people of the city." And so the people taking the tree down said, "I don't know, ask the people in the city." So my next question is, what are we doing to prepare the people that are responding to the public with the right information? Because the people that call me weren't very content with that explanation.
Absolutely. What we usually do, we knock on the door, let the adjacent property owner know that we will be removing a high-risk tree. If they're not there at the time, we leave a door hanger. So I don't know if they didn't receive a door hanger.
Just the adjacent, not up and down the street?
Exactly.
I just might suggest we go further, because the people that were concerned were not the adjacent, but they were on the street, and most of us own our whole streets. You know, we like to know what's going on there. So we might want to think about letting more people know, that's all.
Okay.
Drew, question. I know we're using a lot of. Can you tell me how the contractor relationship is working? We had a sizable forestry department before, and I've noticed an incredible change with the trees coming down and the trees going back up. Can you tell me how that relationship is working from a contractual standpoint? Are we seeing better service and dollar savings?
It's working well. It seems to be very efficient with the removals and the replacements. Now that we're getting in a groove with the with the replanting after one's been removed, that was not the plan to let a tree, let a space be vacant after removal for 3 or 4 months. But it seems like we have a contractor now that's able to obtain the plant material that we will accept and then move forward with the planting.
But is it also safe to say, I mean, because I know that you and I have chatted before, and when trees come down and we're having difficulty getting our hands on new trees due to the demand, the contractors are moving on to the next tree to take down the next tree, and the next tree could also be I would rather them take down the hazardous trees And if there's a backlog of trees that are coming in because demand is really sucking up the supply, I'm happy as long as they get rid of those trees that are dangerous, because I've seen trees come down, and I'm much more concerned about people getting hurt than if there's a month delay on a tree going in.
Absolutely.
So, all right, good. Thank
you. They're two different contractors, and so they're each working independently and moving forward at the pace that we can push them to,
gotcha,
to get their work done.
The last thing I would say is, and this might be a cultural thing, but we thought we had a tree farm. We never had a tree farm. We never managed it as a tree farm.
We won't say never. We used to a long time ago.
Well, that's been at least 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe we should refer to it as the grove, the forest, something else. But the term tree farm in our city is a misnomer.
Right.
And I don't know when it ended, but it ended at least 6 years ago.
At least 10 years.
And it wasn't able to be used in that regard, and we won't go back and disguise what was and wasn't. I'm sorry, I have the floor. What was or wasn't mismanaged, but we don't have a tree farm anymore, so that's something that I wish we could. You can call it the Cooper, McMacken, Bradley, Sprinkle and Leary Grove or something other than
future
what
sports
it is.
Complex. So,
Thank you
very much.
Thanks,
good job.
Mr. Chairman, we're discussing professional consultants reports. I don't know if you're doing that or if Ms. Meaner is doing that with us.
We'll tag team it a little bit. At the previous commission meetings, the commission asked that we bring back a list of the various consultants and the status of when the last time they were bid, et cetera. You have that in your packet. We'd be glad to answer any questions. You can see most of them have been bid within the last 5 years, and then up to the right we have special notes for certain items that are different than just your average professional contract. For example, the charter requires us to bid our audit services every 3 years, so that note is in there, and we do that. Be glad to answer any questions. This came up as a discussion related around the attorney contracts, and it's been a long time since we've done the labor contract. It was 2009 the last time we did the city attorney contract. But I will say that we have not found any other cities that routinely bid city attorney services. They do it when they're ready to make a change, typically, not just as a routine.
Well, the other thing, and Mr. I guess I'm as intrigued by whether we change it or not as by do we have the right structure. So I did a survey of one city, which is a little bigger than we are, just to our south, and they don't have, in their attorney's contract, they don't have litigation fees. I don't know how they handle litigation fees, but it's not in the retainer, at least. That to me is what I guess is, I'm certainly not going to suggest anything improper by Mr. Brown or anything, but the incentive to litigate, I'm not suggesting he's doing this, but other citizens have said to me, well, if it's in your contract to be a surgeon, you're going to operate. So I think that the idea of potentially looking at additional ways to handle litigation, to me, might be able to save our citizens money. So I'm very intrigued by the structure, because based on the information you presented a couple of meetings ago, we were paying more than our brothers and sisters and other cities were for legal services. And you could argue, well, maybe we're more litigious city, maybe we're around smarter, maybe we've got more complicated issues. I don't know that I can argue those things.
Well, absolutely. We proposed a couple meetings ago about if there's going to be litigation, that we have the opportunity, Mr. Brown can give us an estimate of what that would cost to litigate before we make a decision whether, how we want to defend or if we're doing the actual filing of the suit. We have the ability to bid out just that case, to find an attorney for that case if we're not pleased with the price we think we're getting for that litigation. So
we've been in the neighborhood of between $400,000 and $600,000 a year, I think, in our legal fees.
Right.
Which is, if you started to look at that structure, you realize there's a lot of different ways to spend that money, not just in our city, but in legal services. I remain very, very concerned about the cost of legal services to our citizens today. Very concerned.
So the other one in here is the lobbyist for the city at the state level.
Correct.
Because we did work on the federal, I guess, 2 years ago.
Right.
But we haven't the state since when?
2005.
2005. So you have really the labor attorney, the attorneys, and I hear what you've said about everything, but you have those to deal with. And you also, I think we have to look at the city when it comes to something that was done that long ago. The state, I'm sorry.
And I hear you. They've just been so successful of getting us funds that, you can get in there. You can bid it out.
I'm not talking about success. I'm talking about what is it we're asking people to do. This has always been my deal, is that when I came on the commission, the attorney may or may not have been required to attend certain meetings.
Right.
And this is the requirements now. Was that in the original bid that was done in 2008 or 2009? I just think we have to look at what our expectations are as a city, what we're asking people to do now, what do they tell us they could do for that amount of money. So I don't consider it a negative. I consider it a positive for everybody to say what it is they can and need to have done, and what do we perhaps as a city not have, need to have done.
Right.
And so I just think we need to look at it as one of the services that has not been looked at for some period of time.
So when you say look at it, Commissioner, do you mean it should be bid out? Do you mean it should be...
I think it's twofold. I think
we're looking at it right now. So
we're looking at it right now.
We'll look at it, but
so when you do
that's
an
not good enough for me.
When you do an RFP, you have to describe exactly what it is you want for that service. And I would like to see once again what it is we want for that service. Because to be honest with you, I haven't seen that. I'm not exactly sure what our expectations are for the people that we ask. I mean, we do that. We know they respond to us, but are they supposed to respond to this, respond to that? I just want it to be more specific. And that's what we did with the federal lobbyist 2 years ago. I would like to still do that with a state lobbyist, even though in some people's minds they've been successful, and I think they're great guys and all that, but they still have to come back to us and look at it this way. So those are the two areas. The labor attorney, I don't know how all of that got separated. Has it always been separated? Because I don't even see a time frame on that one. But I just don't think you can open-endedly hire people to work for the city without having a review and process. So my recommendation is that we look at those three areas and look at an RFP process. What I'd like to see is what our expectations as a city are, and then turn that into RFP. And I think we, as a commission, should review that.
So would you make that in the form of a motion? Because we're either
so moved.
Is there a second? I'll second that for discussion.
I think I agree there's multiple steps, but I think the first step before we even discuss an RFP is to sit down and evaluate what's occurring now under the existing contracts. To be quite honest, I don't know if any one of these firms is behind or is meeting expectations or exceeding expectations. And as you said,
how would we?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. So I think before we do that, we ought to examine that. And secondly, we need to sit together, just as we're discussing in a little while doing with the library.
Right.
I think you need to come up with, what are the ingredients? What do we want to see in an RFP? And that's going to take a little bit of effort. And once we decide on that, if we still deem it necessary to put one out. So I don't disagree, because my understanding is most of these, whether they're consultants or not, are on a yearly renewal basis.
Right.
And I've been going to the same barber for 25 years. Some people think I got a good cut. Some people think I don't, but it's a fair price, and I haven't been disappointed. And so I would want us to understand what we're asking. I agree wholeheartedly.
Right,
unless you know what you're being asked to do,
right.
How do you know if you're succeeding at that or not.
And we won't talk about A, B, or C, but based on our legal fees, we've seen that we're paying a lot more than other cities are.
We aren't. I mean, once you separate out the litigation aspect of that, we really aren't.
I don't separate that.
Well, I do. Those are two separate things. Well, we have no control over someone suing the city.
I completely disagree.
I don't.
We have control.
I don't think we do. And we disagree on that.
We'll disagree on that. Because in many of these cases, the city
does. Service that we ask for, and then litigation is above and beyond that because we don't have control over that.
Well, I'm intrigued by other cities that somehow figure out a way to have control. I'm sure they have just as litigious citizens as we do.
Well, if I may, it sounds like we have at least consensus from a few of us that there is. Well, I think Commissioner McMackin said that you're okay looking into the performance.
That's all.
Of these, yes?
Yes.
So can we at least get that moving forward? And if we decide after we look at performance standards, if any of these or all of these are meeting or exceeding or not living up to our expectations, then we can certainly require look at putting out an RFP for these services.
I mean, if we're truly good stewards of our citizens' dollars and our responsibilities, any one of these consultants ought to be looked at on a yearly basis. And most of them are on that yearly renewal basis where, yes, we have an opportunity to yay or nay it. And I don't have a problem looking at that at all.
So, I was just looking at it.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to move to an RFP process.
No, I'm not either.
But I'm happy to look at the performance standards. I mean, I tend to agree with the mayor, too, on this, that you certainly, that these things can be controlled. That are, you know, it's not just people suing us, but it's, do we put ourselves in a position to be sued? So, I mean, I think there's opportunities there. Now, and I'm not saying we aren't. And I'm saying just attorney has or has not put us in that position. I'm just saying I do think there's certainly something to look at there. But I'm happy to support the idea of looking at performance standards in the next couple of months, however that comes forward to us.
That's fair.
For all of the attorneys and the lobbyists other than the federal.
Well, we probably do that for all the professional services, and there ought to be just some routine review. And you know, if any of us know how the environmental services one works, or engineering stormwater, then we have experts in our city that do that, and our staff that do that. So, and I don't know if you get a letter grade of A, B, or C, what you're going to do with it. What you're going to do with it? I mean, but today, as it relates to our legal fees, we've seen we pay more, and whether it's because we litigate more or people sue us more, I think we need to look in the mirror and go, that's costing our citizens money.
Well, paying more is, you know, there's, to me, paying more is what are we paying on an hourly rate. Now, whether we're, you know, there's, because a lot of this, again, we don't firmly believe that we have control over some of it. And so whether, you know, I can say we're paying more for something we don't have control over.
I think that's probably part of the discussion once we get to that.
Once we get to that level. So the paying more part, are we getting what? My question is, are we getting what we're paying for?
Thank you.
If we are getting what we're paying for, then we're not paying more. We're paying for a service that we need and we're using. And if we're not, then that's a whole other question.
Well, I'm very comfortable that we are treating our attorneys and our lobbyists different than our other professional contracts, because I think in those situations, certainly the wisdom that comes with a long-term relationship is very advantageous to the city. So for myself, I'm very happy to look at performance. I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem with the issue of what we're paying, because I do think the decisions that we make as a commission in our shade meetings and here have a lot to do with how much litigation we're involved in. And I do think we have more complexities than many of our neighboring cities. So I'm quite comfortable. I am personally quite comfortable with the performance of our existing legal services and our lobbyists. But I'm happy to make that a standard, that we take a look at that. I have no problem with that.
It's not about performance. I really want to make sure people understand this is about, we don't have a mechanism by which we can provide performance. We don't have it. It's not there. I want a mechanism by which not only do we merit pay teachers, we merit pay everybody. There's got to be a way that we can look at. We just did it with Randy. We were able to give him a performance. So if we can do it with our own city manager who works at our beck and call, we ought to be able to do it with the other people who work with us. So I don't want people to think that I am unhappy. I think performance is something that this is not about. This is about us knowing what we're asking for, knowing what we're getting, and being able to tell that to someone, the same thing that you're saying. So I'm not sure what...
We did do an evaluation about a year ago. We can certainly do that again with the city attorney services. Y'all did...
We did about a year ago. You're right. We need that in a formalized manner that's going to happen every year in a certain way. That's what I'm asking for.
Well, and I'm still going to... Whatever you think of it, whatever decisions were made in the past, whether it was thrust upon us tonight, we're spending money in litigation.
Yeah.
And be that because we don't have a choice in the matter, be that because that's what our legal counsel does. Our citizens are spending, I can count at least $300,000 in litigation that I would put as questionable on our fees. So I'm just very interested in the cost. I think that, I know you pay for what you get, but I think our fees are something, and other cities have that structure differently. And that's something we need to look at.
May I just ask for Commissioner Sprinkle, just clarification on your motion, just so I can understand exactly what you're looking for. Because I believe I am supportive of doing an evaluation and understanding what we're paying for. Are you saying move forward with an RFP in your motion, or are you saying to just do that and then look at possibly?
I agree that the first step before you could ever have an RFP is to know what it is you're asking for. And I don't have right now in place what it is we ask our city attorney, our labor attorney to do. That's what I think is the first step. So that's what I'd like the motion to look for. And then if it follows that the next thing is to send out an RFP, but I think we need to clarify that first step.
And will that come from the contracts we have with them currently to test that against what the commission anticipates? Is that
that's
where we have to start?
As well,
as well
as the RFP that was in place when we.
As well as I think we need to benchmark that in terms of services, what other cities pay for and get, and how do they handle that? And I think ours is somewhat unique, at least based on the big city to our south that starts with O and ends with O. Mr. Brown?
Mayor, yes. I provided to Michelle last week a list of the retainer items where we spent 5 hours or more within the retainer for the last several months. And it was a long list. It gives you an idea of the major projects we've been working on within the retainer. And, you know, our effective hourly rate has been analyzed, I think, by Wes. And we're asked to do quite a bit, but I think we can provide you with a lot of detail. I'll leave it to Michelle's discretion if you think that data I gave you ought to be provided as is or if it could be made more succinct, et cetera. As far as litigation goes, the only case that I've ever recommended be undertaken was a declaratory judgment action involving the Max Media and Clear Channel billboard problems. And your issue there was you had Mr. Wiggins had put a stop work order on the Monza Day parcel because they were in the process of erecting a Max Media billboard because someone at Orange County had permitted a digital billboard on the same side of Lee Road within just a few hundred feet of a very large digital billboard that had previously been entitled as part of Ravidage. So if you had done nothing, Mr. Harris had demanded the stop work order be rescinded, or he had a lawsuit he was going to file seeking more than $10 million in damages. So I felt that a declaratory judgment action would, and in fact it did, provide a form, and there was a cost with that, and we had very difficult attorneys and multiple parties, but I think that resulted in an end game that was more palatable to the city than to be engaged in, you know, multi-million dollar litigation with Mr. Harris. And I didn't cause Orange County to issue a second permit of a billboard. So, you know, and the same thing is true, you know, we expended money on the Capen House. You know, I didn't cause a nonprofit group to sue the city because people put the Capen House on a barge and shipped it across the lake.
May I interrupt?
I could go through each.
Yeah, I don't think we should do that here. I think that's what we're asking for. Is we can probably have
that
discussion.
Yeah.
We
need to understand
in the future.
It.
Yep.
Thank you.
And that's fair. I just don't want you to feel like you're under the gun here at this point.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to do an RFP process that looks at both our legal, labor attorney, and state lobbyists. What we would do with that, I guess, is probably judge the performance if that's what's on the table at this point, and then whether we set that on the street for other purposes would come after that process. Is that how I understand it? as the seconder?
What I asked to clarify was that perhaps not use set the RFP process in place, but set
the the establishment of what we expect is based on the RFP. I know we think of RFP as that goes to the street, but an RFP doesn't necessarily have to go to the street. You look at what you look at what you've established and compare that to.
Are you talking about the RFP that was originally used to hire the attorney mayor? Is that the RFP?
Well, the maker of the motion, I think, is referring to 2014, thinking not 2010.
I'm thinking that we need to look at what we need today in 2014 and to find out what that is. And this comes about as a result of people telling me, well, I just call Larry. Well, I don't just call Larry, okay? So is there any rule about who just calls Larry? So those are the things that I think we need to decide. And we need to know that it needs to be uniform by all of us and by boards. That's all I'm asking for.
And so in this process, we would set up the RFP process, but that does not mean it goes to the street.
Right, at this point, it's not going to the street.
No intention of going to the street right now. All I want to do, just to be clear, Commissioner, because I think I'm on board here. I want to clarify for my own. We're setting up a process so we understand exactly what's been done and what we're looking for. And it would put in place an RFP process. So if we were to go to an RFP, we would say, these are the types of services we're looking for, based on a study of what we currently have.
What if we remove the words RFP and simply agree that we would all like to come to some consensus as to what sort of support the city would like to have from an attorney, period? And then we're not talking about preparing an RFP. We're saying that there is uncertainty as to what is and is not okay relative to the city attorney. I mean,
that is the first step. If that's what we need to do tonight, I'm very content to do that tonight.
Well, you put the term RFP, so as the maker of the motion, we need to either adjust that. You made the motion, so we need to either adjust that or we need to. And you know, RFP that doesn't go to the street is an RFP. I mean, it's what we would expect a person to be doing with our thinking today.
Expectations.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, I appreciate that, but so, I think it's giving some members of the commission just a little bit of...
I got calls this weekend as a result of that, so obviously...
So I don't mind adjusting that to expectations, current expectations, whatever you want to do, but you're the maker of the motion.
Okay, well, I'd like to change it to take the words RFP out and include expectations.
Excuse me? How about a scope of service? That would be
scope of service/expectations.
Then we can benchmark against others. Would that be okay?
That's great.
Okay. /expectations. And as the seconder of the motion, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Further commission discussion? I will say, Commissioner Mackin will agree to disagree. We're paying too much. Whatever the process is, we're paying too much.
If we're giving,
and it may not be Larry's.
What we're asking for.
Well, it may not. Yeah, but you know, I can go out and spend. I just learned $511,000 for a car, or $26,000 for a new
haircut, or $55 for a haircut.
And we can plant a tree for $25 or $350.
And I'm into relationships with people that we have long-term need for. But here's my question.
Well, that's fine, but I'm not going to pay more for those of
others. Mr. Mayor, I appreciate that. Here's my question. Commissioner Sprinkle, I need to understand if we are, and I would prefer scope of work is an element of an RFP, so for me, I'm not going there. But my issue is, are we only talking about the two attorneys, or are we talking
about... She was
about
very explicit in her motion. Legal labor attorney, state lobbyist.
Okay, we're going to define what we expect from those three.
Those are the three that have not been redone since 2005. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to us about this motion are welcome to. Actually, this is a non-action item, so we can't take action on it. So I guess that this will have to be.
But that's good. This
can we move it to a non-action item?
It's up to you, but we understand what you've suggested, and we can bring that back. If there's consensus.
No, I placed this. This was placed. I didn't place it. This was placed on the agenda as a non-action item. So there is a motion and a second. Can we take action on it with a non-action item or not?
Yes, sir, you can.
Okay, thank you. Open the floor for public comment. Citizens that wish to speak to us about this matter are welcome to at this time. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You ready to vote? Quickly, the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. We'll take citizen comments near the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to go to the consent agenda.
I'd move for approval.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor? Oh, pardon me. Any further commission discussion? Open the floor for public comment about our consent agenda. Any citizens wishing to speak about any of these matters with us are welcome to. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes.
Do you want to do, Mr. Mayor, could we recommend doing the Lee Road discussion as opposed to the library task force? Or?
Well, I'm open to what you all want to do.
We'll get it under the fire. I
can take item 11A and probably take the Lee Road. You want to take Lee Road?
Lee Road.
Let's take 10B, acquisition of property located at 2600 Lee Road. Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir. We had the opportunity to acquire this piece of property that has been subject to several code enforcement and legal challenges over the years, and there's currently a dispute as to whether or not the existing nonconforming use has gone away. I don't know what the right legal term is, but under our code, if a nonconforming use is abandoned for 90 days or more, they've lost the right to operate. In this situation, the owner of the property as well as the owner of the business operating there claim that it has not gone away for 90 days. They've been open periodically throughout that time frame. We have evidence to suggest otherwise. They have evidence to suggest they have been operating. But the owner of the property has offered to sell us the property, and which would permanently do away with that use at that location. The price is $990,000. The property appraised at $830,000. But the last time we were involved in litigation with this property, it cost us about $280,000.